Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Scott Coyne and I'll be your host for this episode, and joining me to chew over the week in Belgian football is the BFLP's very own resident Belgian, Mr. Joris Beck. How are you, Joris?
Well, my dreams from last week have been shattered, so I'm not sure, but I'm doing fine.
Yep. You can tell us in grisly detail about your dreams being shattered just shortly when we jump into talking about the championship playoff, which Joris is referring to. Our own in-house resident Genki, Genk losing convincingly 3-0 at home to Nicky Ayan's Club Bruges, Cercle and Anderlecht drawing one each, and Union Saint-Gilloise hammering Antwerp 4-1 in the playoff one games, Joris. Interesting to see where we are kind of now, because I really want to get your thoughts, first of all, this week on Club, because they've been cruising along kind of quite nicely since Nicky Ayan came in, undefeated as well, since he's come in the playoffs, winning five, drawing one, and they're kind of banging the goals in at the moment. Their efficiency is where they would want it to be at this time of the season. They've scored 16 and only conceded three as well since he's come in. So they're doing very well at the moment and managing. Well, I say managing, we don't know the answer to this yet. They've got a massive game coming up in a couple of days as of recording, the first leg of their Conference League semi-final against Fiorentina, and we don't yet know how this is going to play out in terms of affecting their league form, but they've got themselves into a really good position. They took your boys down this weekend.
Yeah, well, twice in a week. Maybe talk a little bit about the reverse fixture, since it's easy, since it was we can do that now in this playoffs as well. But the Wednesday game was a disaster from Genk. Defending was horrible. Unfortunately, defending was still horrible on this one. But at least the general level was better until they got behind. From Genk's point of view, until completely got on front with, a mistake from McKenzie. Unfortunately, on all of the goals, he was not very convincing in this one. On the second, is it the second? Yes, I think it was the second. It's not a nice thing to say, but he should not have let Saba through so easily. So he should have taken a yellow card there probably and taken that one for the team. He didn't, and the game was over. After the 1-0, you could feel that a little bit. Genk was better than Wednesday, like I said. He had a lot more intensity. They really are still having good playoffs so far. Let's see how it goes further on, of course. But this could be a turning point in a bad way. Definitely not looking great in these games defensively. While that has been one of their strong points, they got now 7 goals against Brugge in those two games, while they only had conceded 8 in the previous 10 games, of which, again, of these 3 against Brugge and NFL again, so that definitely a bogey side at the moment. That was, mind you, still a Brugge under Dela as well, though. Hopefully for that. That's what hope gives me hope still for the remainder of the playoffs. Not for the title anymore, obviously, but for still finishing on good terms, as I say. And Club Brugge, out of those stats, it comes a bit as well. You mentioned them already as well. Their goal scoring form and their defensive stats. I think that's the main thing, that they're defending really well. Everything looking bright for them. Thiago scoring twice in those games as well, finally. So that was always one of the worries still, despite a good run of form. But if he also starts scoring again, they have all the things in the right place. And we would have thought that when Nicky Haye got in there, it's turned so quickly. Really on champion scores. I'll throw out all my things, I think, that in the beginning already. Saba was playing really well. He's been really good, actually. Not only here, he scored and he gave an assist. like I said, probably McKenzie could have done better on both occasions, but nonetheless, he apart from this game, he has actually not getting a mention much of us, I think, so far. So I think he's worth a shout for his performances at the right back as well. Since playing a bit more now after spending much of the time still at club next this season, I believe, as well. But Haie made a really good change at halftime as well. So they, at that time, they had just taken the lead a bit against the run of play. Genk didn't create many chances though, but a bit against the run of play at that time. But Nusa was really not in the game, and Eluadi was actually having a good one again. But a change that looks a bit weird on paper maybe, but getting Nusa off and Jutgla on, it really was a good change. And like, they were in complete control after they got the lead initially. We'll never know what would have happened if Genk would have scored first, because there were not enough chances for that. There's really one big one for Eluadi after 5 minutes, and I think that's the main one.
That's an interesting point, that actually, you're talking about what would have happened if they went behind, because, you know, we're talking about Nicky Hyen doing well and, you know, winning five, drawing one so far in the playoffs. The only game where they've slightly come a cropper was the first game, the Bruges derby against Cercle, where they did go behind in that game. And I did see some people this week actually saying, well, this is the one thing we don't know yet, how they respond to kind of going behind. The one time they've done it, they haven't managed to win the game, which is interesting.
But they easily could have, though. They had all the chances to do so. So that's I'll already throw that in as well.
Yeah, they had a very strong second half during that first playoff game. That's right. I want to get your thoughts on kind of Europe this week, because Europe's a funny thing. You know, when a club's doing well in Europe and it's doing well in its own domestic championship race as well, then there's always this unknown quantity of how's this going to affect them? And we're going to find out in a couple of days. We know all it takes is something very small, like one or two injuries to key players, to then have an impact on what many would consider to be the main competition, the domestic championship and the Pro League, which is obviously very important to try and win that from a financial point of view and all of those Champions League implications. Just a reminder to those who've forgotten, because some probably have, we're going to see that new format kicking in as well, which means more games next season. So that again has extra financial implications as well. So basically, you know, winning your own domestic league and making sure you're in there is more important than ever. Having said that, they've got a massive two-leg semi-final coming up against Fiorentina, which won't be easy. And Fiorentina, of course, just to remind everybody, have a certain former Anderlecht striker in Christian Kouame playing there at the moment as well, just to add a little extra Belgian flavour to this tie.
Yeah, well, I think they have a good chance. I think I talked about that last week already as well. I've seen Fiorentina play twice this season against Genk, and they were, even though they did in the end get enough result out of the games, but their level of performance was not that great that you would necessarily need to be afraid of them. Of course, there is the factor, there's a semi-final. And I think they were there. Yeah, they were there last year as well in Europe. So they might have some more experience on that, extra pressure. But on paper, you would not be completely afraid. I struggle to think a Belgian team against an Italian side ever can be a favorite, because also it's always an Italian side. It's always a factor in Europe. They know how to rile teams up as well, despite maybe going down and so on. Okay, sorry for generalizing here as well. But yeah, just like that, I really think it's a 50-50 matchup before the first tie, of course, still.
I think as they perform the way they've been performing recently, they definitely, you know, are in with a shout. There's no doubt about it. And I hope they still are in it, you know, come the second leg. Same with the league, because, you know, nobody, as you were saying a little while ago, really expected club to be in the position they're in now with Nicky Hyen coming in. So far in the short period that he's been in, he has exceeded expectations, which has obviously risen them considering where they've gotten to in Europe as well. So, you know, there is the potential to win an incredible double there, which, you know, yeah, you know, short of a few weeks ago, none of us here at the BFP saw that on the horizon at all. Well, I think we felt they would maybe do, you know, had the potential to get this far in Europe, but, you know, the upturn in form just raises everyone's hopes as to what's possible.
Yeah, I think, well, at least I'm quite sure I laughed with it when they were always talking about winning the treble. I'm not sure if I actually mentioned it here, but yeah, on the list. But like, okay, treble is not possible anymore, obviously. But to be fair, they actually gotten quite close to the cup final as well. In the end, that didn't go through. But yeah, we did not think they would. It might not materialize, but that they're actually at this stage of the season still in for two prizes, yeah, is a feat on itself.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, and also, I mean, we've talked about this a lot throughout the course of the season, how they've for the most part underperformed considering the depth and quality of that squad, and maybe now, whether it's because of the coaching change or something else, that quality and depth is now starting to kind of, you know, show its worth, I think. And it's just interesting that it seems to have done that. One other little bit of news around kind of club is that Vincent Manner has now sold his shares, hasn't he, Joris, to Bart Verhaeghe and the main holding company there. We know that Vincent is going to be stepping down at the end of the season, officially, although probably on an ongoing basis, we'll still have an informal relationship with the club, you know, partially mentoring is it the new CEO, Bob Maydew, as well. So that's interesting that, you know, from a legal and a business point of view, he's relinquished his shares now on his way out. The other couple of games in playoff one, Circle drawing one each with Anderlecht at the Jan Breidel, Joris. Anderlecht mixing things up a little bit, forced upon Brian Reimer, obviously because of some injuries there that he doesn't want at this time of the season. I saw them coming in for a bit of criticism actually this week, particularly from some sections of their own fans who were unhappy with kind of the way that they played this weekend. They felt that they played Circle's game rather than their own, you know, the people criticising, you know, a long ball game rather than playing the Anderlecht way, if you like, you know, a passing game, which I thought was interesting. And I just wonder, do you think that was more to do with tactical tweaks on Reimer's part and changes to starting lineup, or do you think it was just because he felt that was probably the best way to play Circle on their own turf?
Well, they have beaten Cercle easily the past two games with their own play, and this was not their own. Indeed, they adapted partially enforced, indeed, by injuries. Missing Dreyer is never going to help your side, in this case at least, since there's no other player like that brings the same impact in numbers. At least I think it's not a secret that I'm not a huge fan of the player himself, but like, he brings all the stats that they need at the moment, especially in this season where they have been all about efficiency. But I am indeed wondering why they indeed seem to have deliberately gone for a long ball approach against the Club Brugge. Well, given the amount of that there were, it actually should be deliberate. Otherwise, well, that's an even worse sign, maybe even that. I found it a bit strange stories as well. I also noted down, like, why did they not play like the last 10 minutes there? They did it better throughout the whole game. I think in this specific case, to single out one player, Ashimero had a really good impact on that midfield. The Delaney Ritz combination, they were second best all over the game until then. They should definitely... Well, it's a surprise in general that this was a 1-1 draw. Easily could have gone to 3-3, I think. Denki actually missing a few really good chances, almost sitters. Mm. Seems like there's a bit of a curse against Anderlecht for him because they're the only side he hasn't scored against yet. In the Belgian Pro League, and are currently in the Belgian Pro League.
That's why we call you a resident stat man, because you come up with crackers like that.
Yeah, but a bit of really great strike from Daland on the other hand, though. So that's made up a little bit for that. Although Dinky probably could have added at least one through that. Yeah, definitely the header, I think, in the beginning, relatively in the beginning of the second half or after the 1-1. And then, yeah, right now, actually, it's a toss-up, but they both should sit, actually, given his stature in the league now as well as top scorer. Like, the right before halftime, where we got a bit lucky that he got the ball back after he missed one, too. But and I don't know which other player it was that was sliding and fell down and left the ball for him to... Yeah, hit the target from basically a penalty kick, and yeah, he just put it wide and over at least. So that was not the best of finishing, for sure. Also on the other side, on the though, like I mentioned, it could have been 3-3. Yeah, Delaney, it was an incredible miss. I think at least the second time. It was already on a rebound. It was in these final 10 minutes. Then Anderlecht really had 4 or 5 really big chances that they missed. How Delaney did not get the ball in the back of the net, that still goes beyond me a bit. Yeah. And of course, yeah, this was really they actually did score in those final minutes as well, with Amuso with actually a great finish, you would say, but actually it was a really dumb action because Achimero had gotten a true ball aimed at Angulo, who would not have been offside, and while Amuso clearly was, even though the VAR actually took their time to actually check that, but it was quite obvious and Angulo left the ball for Amuso then, which was the wrong choice, obviously, despite the good finish. An overriding fact is now still remarkable. 5th time in 6 playoff games that the team go in first place did not win their game. Only Anderlecht, so only in the reverse fixture on Wednesday, I believe, or was it on Thursday? The last week, they were the only ones that were leading the pack that had won their game then. But in that statistic also has gone now. And Cercle Bruggen is, unlike in the regular season, really taking points off almost everyone at the moment.
Yeah, it was so interesting to me this weekend to see Anderlecht kind of change that tactical approach, which to me, I think it must have been deliberate. It just must have been, because they did so many things differently this weekend that they haven't really done all season against anybody, rather than playing their natural game that has worked for them. And they definitely are not particularly responding strongly, I would say, to being out front and having it in their own hands. They're not the only side to have had some jitters, but they're yet to kind of, you know, enjoy, if you like, being out front. I noticed some of the camp, Anderlecht camp this week, were saying, well, you know, if you'd said to us that within 4 match games of the end of the season, it was in our own hands, then, you know, we would have taken that, and of course they would. And I think when you consider where they were last season, we knew there was going to be a lot of surgery and changes, and there was. And I think they probably are ahead of plan. Longer term, they obviously wanted to be in playoff one and came out quite publicly and said, look, we want to challenge for the title next year, i.e. this year, which they're definitely doing. But they have exceeded expectations slightly. Looking at some of the numbers, there was something else I wanted to get your thoughts on as well. Their away form, while it's not awful, it's not great either. And when you get down to this kind of stage of the season, I'm just wondering whether... They've got a couple of away games left only, obviously, like everybody else does, the same number. But I do wonder whether they might need to pick up more there than they've done elsewhere, just because their home form's very strong. They've won 14 out of 18, but their away form's a bit meh, you know, winning 7, drawing 7 and losing 4. And that away form, I just wonder whether that might be a factor in the end picture.
Yeah, that definitely will be. This was their first away point in the playoffs as well, to really pin it down to that as well. That's not great. On the other hand, it's a weird statistic, but hypothetical option. If all the 3 teams that are now within 1 point of the first place are winning all their home games and they don't take points at away from home, then Anderlecht are definitely going to be champion. So if they win their home games, so all three game teams, then that would be the case as they play Anderlecht. So they play Club Brugge still at home and Union away, but they have very small, but still a little margin on them. And then Union, Club Brugge Union as well, of course, that would put Union out of the picture there as well. So yeah, interesting weeks, but their away form, if they can increase it, then definitely that would make them even more title favorite, or maybe even more would make them title favorite. But I also feel like it's really late in the season to still have that happening. So I'm not very convinced.
Yeah. I think there's so much at play here that's kind of quite interesting and revealing. And the other thing as well, of course, is Club, because they've got those two extra European games. And Union have the cup final coming up as well. That extra game, we don't know yet whether that is going to be a factor in any of this as well. We will find out. Speaking of Union, they battered Antwerp 4-1. Their second defeat of Antwerp within the space of 4 days. Obviously, they went to the Bossel during the week and won 3-0. They then went 4-1 at the Marien on Sunday there, and they've got their mojo back, because I have to say they played some really good football this weekend, the best football I've seen from them certainly since before the playoffs started. And I was quite hesitant to say here at the BFP that I felt it was over for them during that little sticky spell at the start there where they lost those four on the bounce, because it was still early yet, and there's just something about this side. You know, all they had to do was get back on track, which they've done now. The mojo's back. And as Alexander Blessing was saying, it's very unlikely that Anderlecht and Club are going to win all of their remaining games. So they're absolutely back in this. And their next three games, Union's, are going to define their season as much as anyone else's. Obviously, they've got Anderlecht at home this weekend. Then they've got the cup final. And then they go to the Jan Breidel to play Club again.
Yep, that's definitely very... Their fate might be more easily seen. In the bad case, I guess, might be over sooner than from the other candidates in these playoffs that are left for the title. But yeah, also already a small caveat, of course, they played Antwerp twice. It was maybe the good right opponent to get them back into this and back on track as well. With all respect to Antwerp, they also still might beat my side later on. But at the moment, they're really not in the best of forms. And they're probably the right opponent to indeed get some confidence against and regain that. Also still a bit worrying for Antwerp, though, of course, then two big defeats against the side you have to play again in just a matter of 10 days now. That should be worrying. On the other hand, they might have played a bit less, especially now after the Union turned it around and made it 2-1. Maybe they reshifted their focus a little more specifically. Maybe probably not officially that they did that, but in the minds of the players, maybe that might have played a role. Yeah, another worrying thing for Union still is, like, this time it was not Maurice's mistake, but Sadiki's mistake. They still gifted a goal, and it keeps on happening these playoffs. This time they managed to turn it around, but and they are capable of doing so. We know that, but you always make it yourself so much more difficult. By doing so, especially at this scoreline, of course, they would already be 4-0 up. Yeah, then it's just a side fact. Now, okay, eventually it is a side fact, but not throughout 30 minutes or so until they turn it around. 20 minutes, I think, even though already. But yeah, interesting fact is that Puertos now has more goals scored in the playoffs than he did in the regular season. And well, he's been good all season, so it's not that, but just. Yeah, definitely that. Also, Sadiki indeed handed Janssen his first goal in 10 games, which was a dry streak of a striker that I had not really had taken notice of before. from Janssen. He had that before in last season as well, I believe, though, or maybe even this season at a certain point as well. But what else is there to mention? Really brilliant assist from Ashida from a center back to the left outside pass with your left foot. Yeah, not many will do that in the Belgian Pro League, and maybe even further than that. Yeah. So that was a really, and also a good finish from Nielsen on that too, as well. And really the Antwerp really need to turn it around for the cup final for against the same side. Like I said, should be frightening in a way.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the cup final, which is coming up very soon, obviously, between Union and Antwerp. And we will be bringing you a special cup final preview very soon, in fact. We'll be welcoming a couple of guests here to the BFP. Fan representatives of both Union and Antwerp will be joining us to preview that big game. And it's interesting because, obviously, the sides know each other extremely well now. And Mark van Bommel actually was commenting just post-match, actually, after the defeat of the Marion this weekend. He said that it's very important that they don't fall behind in the final. They do not want to go chasing that game, particularly against this Union side as well. And he said something even more interesting than that when he said that he felt that they were going to have to approach the game slightly differently. So that might be a bit of psychology. Just to kind of keep Alexander Blessing thinking, perhaps, we will see the starting lineups. I think will probably tell us much, and we will talk a lot more about this on the cup final preview. But I thought that was a really interesting comment from Mark van Bommel, who this week, of course, has been linked potentially with a certain role with Feyenoord back in his home country, Joris.
Yep. Well, I think I've mentioned it at least internally in our WhatsApp group, but I don't think it's a big secret anyway. The chances are very likely that he will leave. I think that decision has been made by himself long ago, even though it's not officially communicated yet. The signs are like it as well as now. And maybe he should have actually done that. If I were him, maybe I would have done it even last season already. Because you can't repeat that success, obviously, since it was such a huge success. But I hope for him that he can indeed turn it around and that it doesn't really completely peter out like it is at the moment. It looks like it is, at least.
Yeah, there's some interesting implications ahead for that cup final as well, which we'll talk in more detail about as well on our preview. Obviously, if Antwerp win it, it's the perfect point for Mark van Bommel to go out on, winning back-to-back cups. Equally, Union are going for their first cup in over 100 years. 1914 was the last time they won the cup. So there's a lot riding on this game, aside from the European implications for it as well. Speaking of European implications, let's talk about playoff two, Joris, the European playoff. This weekend we saw Mechelen beat Leuven 3-0, Standard Liège failing to win again in the playoffs, drawing at home at Sklessen against Torsten Fink's St. Truiden side, and Ghent doing it the hard way, coming from behind to beat Westerlo 3-2.
Yes, Standard, there was interesting things going on there everywhere. Like, the fans were still protesting, so very empty Sclessin at the start of the game, and even, I think, throughout the game, I'm sure it was not sold out, which I understand for a game in the Europe playoffs and being a club of the size of Standard, given recent years and it's given realistic expectations. But, main thing to mention there, I think, for them was the debut for Epolo in goal. Starting debut. Definitely worth a shout. And one of the funnier moments, or probably the funniest moment of the weekend, or maybe even of the season, was the striking partnership between Kanga and Yeboah, who actually seemed to, at a certain point in the season, seemed to really be clicking well and working well. Seeing it live being shattered over a penalty in the Europe playoffs where you're not in the fight for anything anymore, because you're not fighting for that first place anymore either, realistically, fighting for a penalty and then the mate to kick it. The kicker is, of course, that penalty was overturned, so it was not even a penalty. So that makes it even more ridiculous. That's just that made the joke even better. The jokes on everyone involved.
It's tough playing for Standard Liège these days, as we know. But fighting over a penalty, which was not a penalty in the end, kind of sums it all up, really.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah, and what else is there to mention for Sintra other than a ricochet goal from Ogawa? That was a word I was looking for last week. I realized as well when I saw the replay, not carambol, but ricochet. That it all was clear, I guess. that's a personal thing now. But Sintra have not lost in their 6 last trips to Sclessin. That's also worth an unusual streak worth to mention for sure. Yeah, and the rest in these playoffs, Gent are cruising, even though they made it indeed a bit more difficult for themselves. Only competitor is still Mechelen, maybe will stay 6 points behind. So if they win the one remaining duel between them, they might still hope for a slip up from Gent in other games. But if they don't win, they really need to win that. I think it's even the next fixture in the league. Playoffs. Yeah,
yep. It's kind of set up for the all important showdown. Obviously, if Gent win that, then it's all over. Should Mechelen win it, then it's probably going to go to the wire.
Yeah, not even if Gent don't lose, I guess.
That's true.
The cap is probably good enough. Yeah, on Gent, a roof mistake in making it a little bit more tense than it should have been. Also, a really bad start, conceding after less than a minute as well, of course. But Gandelman scored again his 5th goal against Westerlo this season, so he definitely has a favorite opponent in this league. And a negative shout out to Tahir, who is really not having the best of playoffs. He's not that it matters that much. So obviously happening in the playoffs, because I think in the rest of the season, he probably made mistakes as well, but it was not as costly as here, but luckily it isn't actually costly in these playoffs. They will be happy to be in this one, but they just keep on giving away goals. One last thing on Gent, not among the game itself, but Julien de Sarre getting a contract extension as well that he signed last week. That was in the pipeline already for a while, I think, but it finally happened. And yeah, the main news out of your playoffs maybe comes from Mechelen as well. Skov scoring another banger. Oh no, wait, that was not the news. It's the truth, but it was not the news. That of course Hazi confirming that he is leaving Mechelen. I'm sure you will have some comments on that in a little while. But let me quickly point out 2 things. So Bassett was back as well and scoring on the scoring sheets. There was a weird penalty retake actually in that game as well, but it ultimately nobody cares because it's in this Euro playoffs and this game specifically was also decided already. And one player who is not very lucky in the playoffs either is Braut Brunes. He only has scored 3 goals this season, but I think he already scored 3 in the playoffs that I got ruled out as well, at least 2. And they were really nice finishes as well, which we hadn't seen from him, to be honest, all the rest of the season. But now they even get chopped off as well all the time. Of course, if he's offside, he's offside. But at least he showed he actually has a nice finish in him at times. But at Leuven, the other thing to mention is less fortunate. Opoku really, I still don't know how to translate it. Is it indeed tibia injury or is it a really bad injury and breaking a lot of things in places you don't want to break, things that hurt a lot? That's also why the players before the game already had a shirt for him on to encourage him as well.
Yeah, horrible one for him. Hope he gets well soon, or as well as you can with an injury like that, because it's one of those ones, you know, it's a bit like similar to an ACL in that, you know, double breakages are, you know, in the same kind of injury ballpark as that for me. Just horrible, horrible things for footballers, which mean you're going to be out for a long time as well. So we do wish him well. You mentioned really what's probably the big story of the week, up to now anyway, and that's Besnik Hasi's departure. This had been rumbling on for a little while. Obviously the club had been talking to Besnik about the possibility of staying. He was interested in staying. An offer was made, and there was obviously a deadline put on that. I think Hasi himself is the one who's ultimately called time in it and thought that we're not going to agree kind of terms. Nobody really knows the areas of disagreement. I think that's probably worth highlighting. He said he wasn't going to discuss them, unsurprisingly. He did want to say there is absolutely not another club in the frame at the moment. We will see whether that's the case or not shortly. That aside, he's done very, very well since he came in, really. Probably exceeded expectations, which one of the reasons why they wanted to hold on to him. And you know, it would have been interesting to see this Mechelen side under Besnik Hasi, his own side. Obviously, he's working with effectively none of his own players, really, unless you include somebody like Islam Slimani, who's come in on loan. But he's done very well in keeping them up, almost getting them into playoff one. You know, so well did they do. And it's just, I think it's unfortunate for them, because I think it would have been nice to see what he could have done with his own players, but they couldn't reach an agreement on probably several things. He was very public about wanting to see the club show more ambition, which can mean more than the obvious. Big choice ahead for Frank Lagast and Tim Matthijs now. Be interesting to see what they choose to do, I think, Joris, because nobody's expecting them really to splash the cash as such. The club do have, for those who don't know, one of the smallest budgets in the Pro League. They're also carrying a bit of debt as well that they're being quite diligent about. There is still some debt around the main stand at the Achterda Kazern, which was rebuilt not that long ago, that they're kind of hoping to finalise paying off within the next 2 years, I think, two and a half years, which will then free up some cash, I suppose. So they're being very, very careful about this. But I think they're just in a precarious position because they don't have a lot to work with. The academy is not quite where you would want it to be at the moment in terms of a pipeline of players. That's a long-term project. And we know that Stephen Defoe didn't work out. So, you know, they're in a vulnerable position, I feel, Joris, just because they're one or two slightly dodgy decisions away from a position they don't want to be in and can't afford to be in again. So it's really about getting this big call right over the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, a few big calls, of course, because indeed many players will be leaving, well, or might be leaving. Kuka running out of his contract. Yep. And then a lot of loan players, as you already mentioned, a few of them. As well. And Slimani, yes, he's been very valuable. He's on loan one and two. Of course, at some point, age will be kicking in. I'm not sure if you would want to risk a bet on that in Mechelen's state at the moment. But yes, definitely a few calls to be made there. And indeed, having to maneuver with a small budget, relatively small budget as well. That's all of these things to them. It's not an easy thing to be in the shoes of the both Matthijs and what was I forgot the name of the other one.
Lagast,
yes, yeah. It's they're in a tough spot at the moment, but maybe they will already have lined up for replacements as well. We'll never know. We don't have the answers, unfortunately.
Yeah, we'll find out which road they're going to choose to go down soon, I suspect. And what makes it interesting is, of course, there's quite a few clubs that are going to see different T1s come the start of the season. So there's going to be a lot of the old musical chairs going on, which may just complicate potentially who they choose to go for as well, if there's interest in other coaches. Be interesting to see where Besnik Hase ends up next as well, Joris, because of some of those vacancies that are going to be coming up in the Pro League. Will he go to another Belgian club, or will he leave Belgium again? Because what this successful spell has done has kind of resurrected his career. There's no doubt about it. So he will get some interesting offers, that's for sure. Moving on, let's have a chat about the relegation playoff, playoff three. This weekend we saw Charleroi defeat Eupen again, this time 2-1. And Molenbeek losing 1-0 at home to Kortrijk in a game which, from Kortrijk's perspective, was absolutely must win. They've managed to do it and they're still alive. There's still hope. They played reasonably well this weekend. I thought Joris kind of hung in the game. Molenbeek probably should have got something out of the game, I think, based on what they created. Couldn't take their chances, but that Misatu goal, that long ball over the top, and that little dinked finish, enough to win the game, to keep the relegation playoff very much alive and interesting.
Yes, anything else than a Kortrijk win would have probably sealed all the positions or the important positions, of course, at least in these playoffs. Charleroi are safe now. That's also worth a mention, but let's touch on that afterwards. But yeah, much needed win for Kortrijk. Keeps them in this. 2 points away from Molenbeek at the moment as well then. So yeah, like I said last week, it's not completely over yet. Unfortunately, now comes, of course, the factor that RWDM plays Charleroi, who are, like, touch on that a little bit as well. I mentioned it already, are safe now. We'll always have to see in how that pans out for Charleroi players as well, in their, how the minds are still, of course. And of course also, like I said last week, I think as well, like with then it would be against Eupen, who by that time most likely also will have nothing to play for anymore officially, while now even they still have a chance of survival if they win both the games that are left and a few other results go well as well. But there's still a fighting chance. But not great for not a great lookout for Kortrijk, and despite the win, unfortunately. But they did what they needed to do here. That's all they could have done. And now they will have to hope for some luck of the draw. Well, they didn't have the luck of the draw. I just explained why not, but maybe somehow it pans out differently. All a really slim chance. And they really do like to play against Molenbeek as well, though, because they scored 7 of their 27 goals, so nearly one quarter of their, or a bit more even than one quarter of their goal production has come against this one side, which is quite remarkable as well. Hopefully it really does not have any impact, but was it a handball for the goal that Carlos Alberto scored for Molenbeek? I personally doubt it as well, and I know you already had some doubts as well.
Yeah, that's a
really confusing decision.
That's a really interesting one this weekend, because when I was watching this game, I didn't see anything wrong initially. Then they pulled it back to have a look at it, and I don't think it was hands either. You know, so Molenbeek do have reason to feel aggrieved by that. That's for sure. Yannick Ferreira, interestingly, afterwards was talking about, you know, the defeat, and he was remarking that, you know, I think the psychology and the confidence at Molenbeek is obviously kind of quite fragile, you know, as you would expect. But getting those two back-to-back wins after he came in so quickly changed things a little bit. You know, that defeat there psychologically just kind of brings that doubt back into the forefront of their mind again. And it was just interesting that he chose to actually acknowledge that, I thought. He said, look, you know, I think we're probably slightly ahead of where we thought we would be. And if you'd given me this position now, then I would have bitten your hand off for it, you know. So I think he was Yeah, kind of quietly reflective about, you know, the loss is not ideal because it keeps all of this alive. You know, a point this weekend would have seen them very good in the end. So that yeah, the goal being chopped off that probably shouldn't have will hurt a little bit because that would have done the job. And they, like you say, if they've got a tricky game against Charleroi coming up, we don't know with them being safe how that game will be approached by them. So we'll see. Some of the questions that I thought we might have an answer to this weekend, we should get an answer to next weekend. But then again, I said that last week about playoff me as well, and I was wrong about that, so that kept me on my toes. Speaking of playoffs, we know in the Challenger Pro League that the regular season there has now ended and the playoff semi-finals have started. This weekend, Patro Eisden lost convincingly to Denza at home, and Zulte Waregem drew 1-1 with Lommeland in the other playoff semi-final first leg, which keeps that game very much alive. I saw Patro against Denza. I took in all of that game, and Denza, who we spoke quite a lot about last week, have had a nightmare week. The licensing situation is bad, really bad at the moment for them. They come into the first leg of the playoff semi-final and get absolutely battered by Denza, 4-0. Probably could have been more. Patro were really poor, didn't offer a lot, really unstructured, kind of looked like their mind were elsewhere, to be honest. And Steinsteinen, their T1, who, you know, regular followers of their Belgian football will know, got a 5-match ban recently for punching his brother, who's part of his coaching staff, if you missed that story. He was commenting after the game to say that he felt 4-0 was really harsh. He must have been watching a different game, to be honest, from the rest of us, because I think it was a comprehensive victory for Denza, who didn't have to work that hard in the end. And this tie between Patro and Denza is almost certainly over unless we see some kind of footballing miracle in the second leg, which, as of recording, the second legs are tomorrow evening. So depending on when you listen to this, everybody, we may already know the answers to these questions. But yeah, a convincing win for Denza, who will be feeling good about making that playoff final now. The other game, Zulte and Lommel, is on a knife edge, and we'll see who wants it more on Wednesday evening, Joris.
Yeah, if you have to watch one of those games, definitely watch the Denza one. It's the one that's still exciting. All joking aside, of course, this is going to be interesting. And Denza can actually put their scouts more in their video scouts and all, not on their own bench, but actually send people towards the other game, I suppose, safely. Despite the option of a miracle, indeed, but it does not really look likely.
Yeah, I think the one thing you want to do in these sorts of games at this stage of the season is stay in the tie. You never want to get to a situation where, you know, you're blown out of it early, and that's absolutely what's happened to kind of Patro here. I mean, they actually, when I think back in that game now, it was a bit of a nightmare in some respects, because the first goal that they conceded was actually just a really good hit, long-range hit, that, you know, it's the sort of shot that, you know, you're in the stands and you're going, don't shoot, don't shoot. And it's just a fantastic finish. There was a goalkeeping howler as well, and then, you know, a long ball over the top that, you know, should just really never happen. Really poor stuff from them. So Patro will be really disappointed in kind of where they've got to. So we'll see who manages to play what looks like, we said this last week as well, but unless things change massively, which is unlikely at the moment, then it looks like whoever wins the playoff is going to be playing Molenbeek for that place in the Pro League next season. Well, that's just about it for this week, I think, Joris. We've covered the Pro League and the Challenger League. If you want to get in touch with us with any of the listeners' questions, you know where to find us. You can also attack each of us individually on our social media, both me, myself, and Ben, who will be back with us at some point soon. When he gets some sleep, we've said to him, go get some sleep and come and join us when you've recuperated.
You need some sleep?
Yeah, I think he does. Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you have a little baby in the house, Joris. You know what I mean? It's the baby sleep lottery, as I was saying to our Ben today, is one of those wonderful things. You know where you are 1 minute, and then you don't the next. Our Ben will be back with us at some point soon once he's had some sleep. We look forward to welcoming him back. If you like what we do here at the BFP, and we know that regular listeners do, then please feel free to leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. Likewise, please also feel free to send us a bung, as some people call it, or buy me a coffee, which helps us cover some of our costs here at the Belgian Football Podcasts. Just before we go, best of luck to Club Bruges in Europe, Joris.
Yes, but also, who calls it that? The buy me a coffee thing?
Lots of people say that to me. They say that to me. I'm not giving you a bong. Yeah, best of luck to Club Bruges in those big games this weekend, over the next few days. And hopefully, we'll have some very exciting news to talk about soon and the outcome of those games. Have a great few days, Joris. Look forward to catching up with you soon. Likewise, to all our listeners, have a fantastic week, whatever you're up to, and we'll speak to you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.